And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to Voices from the Grid. I'm Michael Lindenbaum, and I'm being joined by one of my several co-hosts. This time around, it is the Yellow Ranger, Mr. Brian Massey.
What's going on, everybody?
All right. So with that, Brian, today on this episode, we're going to be talking no clowning around, Power Ranger punks, and peace, love, and woe. That last one sounds like my love life personally. Just no peace, no love, just woe.
I'm sorry to hear that, man.
So
you want to talk about it?
Maybe not right now. I don't think the people who are listening to Voices from the Grid want to listen about the woes of my dating life.
Today on Dr. Phil.
We're actually going to start off with no clowning around with everyone's favorite segment, in my mind, the quick run through. So here's no clowning around, which we start with, we're at the fair. Yay! And Zach's on stilts, and he's dancing until he falls into Jason's arms romantically. How cute. But oh no, a putty clown shows up in plain clothing and then kind of disappears. We now see Trini with her cousin arriving and the infamous Balkan skull scene that you actually see in the intro is now shown, which is them taking the cotton candy and stuff. Billy, how rude. How dare you cut off Sylvia? I mean, you need to actually let the little girl actually do the juggling bit. But it's okay because I guess Billy's juggling eggs, bulk, and skull anyways. Sylvia wants to stay with Pineapples the Clown. And let's be honest, anybody who's named Pineapples the Clown, I would want to stay as far away from them as humanly possible, monster or not. But Trini reminds her to stick together. At the palace, Rita's happy that the fair is working, and Finster talks about the monster. Back at the fair, the Rangers do a pyramid. But Sylvia runs off with the clown. Never trust someone named Pineapples. I've already put this out there. Just don't do it. Trini goes searching, and Sylvia gets turned into cardboard. Trini runs to the others, and they split up. Trini works on Sylvia at Billy's garage with Alpha, and the others stay behind to fight the clown putties. I'm not going to lie. I actually enjoyed the clown putties. Billy chases Pineapples. And those are some really metal-sounding putties when they get hit. And then Pineapple turns into the monster that he is. And then Rita is pleased, and Goldar has a cold, I think. Goldar doesn't sound very well. And, oh God, that morph call sounded lame. But back at Billy's, Alpha and Trini work on Sylvia while the others battle Goldar, and Sylvia is now back after getting drenched with water. The Panoctopus pollen attack affects Goldar, Squat, and Babu as they retreat. Yes, a monster affected the minions to where they retreated. And then Rita makes her monster grow, and in sword time, good teamwork individually before forming the Megazord. And then back at the fair, all is well as Billy walks on stilts. And a lesson learned by Sylvia. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, that was No Clowning Around, which clocked in at 20 minutes and 16 seconds. And you can hear the cracking of the knuckles in the background already. Brian, go away with the notes.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. So this episode, No Clowning Around, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Season 1, Episode 11, originally aired September 17th, 1993. The Super Sentai counterpart episode was, of course, Kyoru Sentai Geo Ranger, Episode 16, The Great Sneeze Plot. Which originally aired June 12th, 1992 on TVSI. A couple of trivia notes, and then we'll get into some errors, and then we'll get into my notes for this episode. So Zordon does not appear in this episode whatsoever. This marks the first time that Alpha leaves the command center. This episode marks the first of a few times Zach uses the line, "The hand is quicker than the eye." We learned that the putties have the ability to disguise themselves as human beings. They will do this a few more times throughout seasons 1 and 2, as well as some instances of the Boom Studios comics. In those comics, though, Rita's monsters also have the ability to do this as well, but we're not going to get into that. On the original VHS releases of these tapes, episodes 1 through 5, this was deemed as the Pink Rangers episode, even though the focus is completely on Trini. I don't know why. I guess because High Five was, I don't know, whatever. Which doesn't even make sense because this was episode 11, so whatever. Anyways, so let's see. The carnival scene was used again in Rangers in Reverse. And there was a PSA made from this episode showing how trick photography works in television show production. There are some errors here. When the Megazord tank mode blasts the Pineoctopus, Goldar and King Sphinx can briefly be seen in the middle of the explosion. So they reuse that footage. When the Megazord uses its cranial laser, the Tyrannosaurus Dinozord can be seen destroying it instead. It was killed by Guardian Beast Tyrannosaurus and Zeo Ranger and was replaced by Megazord stock footage to waste time. After the Pineoctopus is destroyed, the Rangers return to the carnival, now under human supervision, which makes no sense. I'll get into that here in a little bit with my notes. So, something to mention, as we did above in the trivia, but this was the first... Well, I meant to mention this in my note in the trivia, but it wasn't actually there. But this was actually the first episode of MMPR that was filmed, like, in the can. And we're starting off with questionably unsafe carnival rides with Zach arriving on stilts. Which reminds me of when I used to do BGN Comic Shop, where we would lend our favorite D-list Marvel villain, Stiltman. Oh, Stiltman. I miss you. So, Zach falls and a clown helps him out of the stilts, only to be revealed to the audience as a putty. Another clown shows up and gives a monologue that makes me think that this actor wanted to be the Joker, but really couldn't pull it off. But he was really trying to channel the Joker.
I mean, keep in mind, this is also around the time of Batman the Animated Series.
That is very true. I mean, they were on the same channel, for God's sake.
Yeah.
So, I got about 2 minutes and 30 seconds into this episode, and the carnival music was already driving me nuts. And I had to step away for a second. Because it was just... There's something about, like, loud, drowning, just constantly going carnival music that just drives me insane. I don't know what it is. So how weird is it, by the way, seeing that Bulk and Skull were in the intro with the cotton candy only for the scene to show up in the same episode later on, which I don't ever remember watching this particular episode as a kid, but now the intro is tainted because they stole that cotton candy. Like, how dare you guys became cops later and you're stealing cotton candy. How dare you?
Poor Skull, though, because when he does the thing with his cotton candy, it just goes all over the place. Whereas Bulk has it stayed nice and clean. And
I have no idea what Skull was even trying to do with that stuff. Was he just like, I don't know. He just, I want to say he's chaotic neutral. If we were talking D&D alignments, like Skull is definitely chaotic neutral with the propensity of possibly being chaotic good, but I don't know. He just does not care. So Trini and her cousin Sylvia meet up with the gang, and this clown wants one of them to juggle his eggs, which Billy is way too enthusiastic about.
To juggle your eggs.
Yeah. Bulk and Skull show up and say, "Didn't you see the sign at the entrance? No geeks allowed," only to get egg literally on their face because of this, thanks to Billy. So, knowing that this was the first episode shot in the production schedule, like this was the first one in the can, I can tell that the chemistry between the five Rangers and Bulk and Skull aren't quite up to where we find them at the beginning of season two, or even later on in season one. This is a Bulk and Skull who are still very much trying to be the hardline baddies that they were in like the second pilot that was shot. And this is also a Billy who is still very much in his, oh geez, I'm a geeko wow phase as well. At least that's what I think. I don't know, what were your thoughts on that?
I didn't really think too much about it, honestly.
I mean, it feels like they were just getting started here, which is weird because they have so much more chemistry in Day of the Dumpster. So, it's not a bad thing. It's like the difference between watching pro wrestling as a fan and watching it as a worker. You don't notice all the little things going on so much as a fan, but once you know all the secrets, you can tell when someone's planning for a body slam, is all I'm saying.
Yep.
I mean, kayfabe is still alive, guys. What am I talking about? Wrestling's real. What? No. What am I talking about? No.
Kayfabe, get on with it, boy.
Boy.
Boy, get on with it.
Back to the episode. So the clown monster of the week is in disguise as a human, like you said, by the name of Pineapple. And while I'm not inherently afraid of clowns, there's something off with this dude. he just, and it's not even that that's who he's supposed to be in the episode, but that's just a vibe that he gives off, and it's so weird. Rita and Finster both sound off, which, again, you know, growing pains. Rita, Finster, Goldar all sound off.
Especially Goldar. Goldar sounded really off in this episode.
He sounds like he needs, like, Nasonex or something. He needs to be...
That sounds like he needs to go see the doctor or something. Like,
he needs to be met by the Nasonex B. I don't know. Something, like, somebody give him some, like, Tylenol and tell him to take a nap. So, Rita put on a fake carnival, carnies and all, as a way to trick the Rangers, and the monster Pinoctopus was trained by Finster. Here's the method of attack mentioned in the episode, okay? You ready?
No, I'm not, but go with it anyways.
One, he'll use his magic power to turn the Rangers one by one into cardboard cutouts. And then he'll turn into a horrible Pinoctopus and terrorize the city. Which, judging by the footage when they're describing everything, I can't tell if the clown is going to be turning everyone into a cardboard cutout or Pinoctopus will. Obviously, Finster says that the cardboard cutouts will happen before the clown turns into a tentacle monster, but you know how inconsistent this show can be, right?
What's consistency?
I have no idea. It's a tea in China.
Isn't that thing that that AEW doesn't know anything about?
Hush. Oh, man. Wow. The shade is real. The Squat says, by the way, just as a little thing, I just noticed, the Squat says, I love it when a plan comes together. And I was like, do I smell an A-team reference here? So the gang is doing like a pyramid, and Trini joins the pyramid that everyone's making, leaving Sylvia alone for not even 15 seconds before Pineapple does this weird, let's get out of her thing, and like grabs her hand, taking her elsewhere. And Trini is way too calm when she realizes what happens and goes to find her. It's like, I feel like she should have been panicking way more, but
it's like, I'm gonna morph and find you, clown. It's like, I'm gonna beat you down.
I'm gonna turn you into a Big Mac, buddy.
Where's my Zord? Oh wait, we're not supposed to escalate things.
I'm gonna make clown pate with my foot. So I think someone had to tell the writers to ease up on the technolingo for Billy after this episode was shot, because Billy describes Sylvia being turned into a cardboard cutout as she's been subatomically transduced into a two-dimensional state, and that the quasitronic molecular generator in his garage should be the answer to what they're doing. And somewhere, I don't know why, but I can just hear Ben lamenting that this isn't how science works.
What we need to do going into like season two is like we need to have like a soundboard, and we just insert like Ben just going, that's not how science works.
We need a button or something, like the easy button from like, you know, Office Depot or something. But it's like, boom, that's not how science works. Honestly, it's almost as bad as like season one of Star Trek The Next Generation, just how bad that was. Like, he has another line here, and I'm like, oh, God, you're killing me. He says, like, Rita is attacking, bipedally ambulate to the nearest convenient outlet. I'm like, dude, just tell them to leave. Like, what are you doing? I'm so glad that Billy just chilled out later, is all I'm saying. So the clowns...
Oh, wait till we get to peace, love, and woe.
Oh, Lord. I'm not ready for it. I have notes for it. I'm not ready for it. So the clowns turning into putties is funnier than it should be. And Pennywise, sorry, Pineapple, sorry, is obnoxiously evil. Zach fights a putty near one of these rocking pirate ship carnival rides and tricks the putty into getting hit. And somewhere, I feel like Captain Marvel has just grinned a little bit. I've been watching a lot of Gokaiger lately, by the way. Sorry. So this was really weird to me. Jason traps one putty in a ride's cage. It's one of those like rides that like kind of goes up and down.
Yeah,
and that putty tries holding him for another putty to hit, but the putty in the cage looks like he's giving Jason a neck and shoulder massage. Like I just expected.
You've had a long fight. Let me just relax you a little bit there,
Jason. Baby, tell me what's wrong. You had a bad day at work, didn't you? Oh, you know, like that's what it looked like, man.
Putties know how to give love too, man.
Give me some of that putty love. That needs to be on a t-shirt. Give me that putty love. So, okay, if you bet that Pineoctopus would show up before turning the Rangers into cardboard cutouts, you win. The Rangers morph, and the Japanese footage has everyone fighting in an outdoor band shell, which oddly has a lot of graffiti for it being Japan and all. We switched over to the Zero Ranger footage, and what's funny too is that these types of locations are often where they will run Super Sentai live shows in Japan in real life. Like, best example of this is, like, check out Akiba Ranger, which is the unofficial Sentai, when they did the Die Ranger episode, and it's a very similar kind of structure. Like, it's like a band shell kind of thing. We actually have one in Frederick. But, like, they'll put on, like, you know, live shows for the kids. So I just thought it was kind of funny that they use that particular kind of structure. So Alpha shows up out of nowhere and runs a scan and finds out that water makes Sylvia grow back to regular size. And we're talking, like, a lot of water here. And I thought to myself, wait, is she, like, one of those, like, water dinosaur toys that you put in a class and, like, leave overnight or something? So I initially thought that a Pineoctopus looked nothing like a pineapple, and then he grew up and I saw that he was wearing pants that looked very pineapple-y, and I was like, oh, never mind. So I think the coolest thing about this episode, though, is that the Zords were fighting individually. I really don't think that we got enough scenes like this in Power Rangers. They chose to really go for, like, Megazord stuff, kind of out of the gate. So we didn't really get to see, like, all of the individual, like, we get to see, like, you know, the Tyrannosaurus every once in a while, but we don't get enough of, you know, like, in this instance, we get the Sabertooth Tiger and Triceratops really doing some awesome stuff against Pineoctopus. And that was cool, but then there was really no climax because they kind of just freeze Pineoctopus and that's it. They just leave him there. Oh, shit. And they just leave him there. And so they just kind of leave Pineoctopus there, and then they cut to Rita, and they're back at the carnival? Why would you go back there? Like, it was set up by Rita. Like, Rita straight up is like, yeah, I set this up to trap the Ranger. Why would you go back there? Why is it even there in the first place? I thought that, like, once something, you know, was associated with a monster and the monster died, then everything that was, like, done by that monster went away. That's kind of how this works, right? Why is the carnival still there? Why are there still people working there? Why do they, like, why would they be attacked at the carnival and have something so traumatic as to have Sylvia be turned into cardboard only for them to be like, wow, that was awful. Let's go back to the carnival. Like, I don't understand that.
Like, I just want you to know, after I finish fighting off a monster, I just want to go back to the carnival where the monster came from. I just want to throw it out there.
I mean, you know, get yourself some, like, deep fried Oreos and whatnot, but yeah. But, so, what was it? Okay, so the episode ends with a cute understanding between Trini and Sylvia. Billy does a pratfall and shortest stilts ever made, and then roll credits. I don't know. This, there not being any climax and then them going to the carnival kind of made me go, like, I don't know about this episode. What about you?
Honestly, this is one of the episodes I've actually enjoyed, and honestly, one of the episodes I also remember more vividly than some other episodes.
Really?
Yes, because it's like the whole Sylvia getting turned the cardboard thing always, like, just stood out to me, because, like, I just remember it vividly watching it as a kid. So I was like, being a kid, going like, "Oh crap, can that happen to me? What?" You know? So.
I honestly think I might have missed this episode as a kid because I did not remember this one at all.
Yeah, this is just one of those ones where I kind of remember it vividly. And I actually think I actually do have the VHS for this one too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm not going to go, like, digging under my bed right now, but I know I have two VHSs. And I think this is one of them, the No Clowning Around. Mm-hmm. And the other one is the Wannabe Ranger, which is actually in season two.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so still have those VHSs. So anyways, No Clowning Around, clocked in, I already said the time, 20 minutes and 16 seconds, and had an IMDb score of a 6.0 out of 10.
Not terrible.
No. So coming up next, we now have Power Ranger Punk, so once again, it's everyone's favorite segment in my mind, as I point at my jaw and not at my brain this time, for those that knowing this is an audio podcast. with everyone. And this is a quick run through of Power Ranger Punks. So we start at the episode at the park. The Rangers are playing volleyball and Kim brings drinks. Meanwhile, at the palace, Babu is doing some chemistry and makes a punk potion. And that sly dog flies on his bike to the park to contaminate those drinks. With the help of a putty distraction, of course, Billy and Kim drink the drinks and get infected and trash the rest of the drinks. And they start acting like punks. Back at school, Kim and Billy are dressed like punks. Billy bullies a nerd while Kim flirts with Skull. And she agrees to a date. Zordon has Alpha transport the Rangers with Billy and Kim put behind a shield in a cage. Zordon briefs the Rangers about the situation and about a Squatch. Zach, Jason, and Trini take on the Terror Toad, and he already ate Trini. Then Jason and Zach are forced to change their plan. Alpha is sent to get the Squatch, to which then Alpha gets to the Squatch and shocks the putties, who try to attack him. Meanwhile, Zach and Jason are still struggling, and Zach gets eaten. Alpha gives Billy and Kim the potion, and they're cured and disgusted. They morph into action, and then Billy and Kim hack off the horn, but Jason and Billy get eaten, and damn, Billy, that be graphic, bro, how you got eaten. Babu gets involved, but Kim uses her bow to get the others back, and Kim's power bow for the win, and poor, poor Skull. And I literally wrote a sad face next to poor Skull. So that was Power Ranger Punks, which clocked in also at 20 minutes and 16 seconds.
All right, so let's get on with the notes then. So this was, again, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Season 1, Episode 12, Power Ranger Punks. The original air date was September 20th, 1993. The Super Sentai counterpart episode is Gyoro Sentai Geo Ranger Episode 26, Be Careful of Shaved Ice. And that's going to be very important here in a second. Original air date was August 21st, 1992. Let's start with trivia, then get some errors, and then I'll get onto my notes. So
the you mean 1993?
No, Zero Ranger aired in 1992.
Oh, okay. No, that's okay. That's right. Yeah. Okay, you were talking about the Sentai. I'm sorry. Continue.
No, you're cool. So the flashback footage of the singing squash shows mysterious wizard Barza, the Ranger's mentor in the original Japanese series, which I'll talk about in a little bit. This episode marks the second time after Big Sisters that the main plot of a Super Sentai episode was also used in Power Rangers outside of mere footage requirements. In this case, the plot being the Blue and Pink Rangers being turned into punks with the only cure being a rare herb. The episode would be mentioned again by Kimberly in Island of Illusion. The flashback footage of Billy being swallowed up by the Terror Toad was used in Crystal of Nightmares. Somehow the Power Bow's arrows are apparently self-guided as they're able to swerve around trees to reach their target. This episode marks the only time Babu takes on a ranger directly, stopping Kimberly from destroying the Terror Toad and then being ready to help him finish her off. According to David Yost, this is one of his three favorite episodes of the series, along with Food Fight and Switching Places. Going into errors, and I will touch on this later on, it does appear that Alpha teleported the Rangers right out of the hallway at school without any warning whatsoever. Nobody can know who they are, but hey, let's transport them out real fast. Alpha strangely didn't respond to Billy and Kimberly's questions about what had happened to them after they'd been cured. Zordon told Billy and Kimberly about Terror Toad's weak spot, but for some reason hadn't given this information to Jason, Zach, and Trini earlier. Billy, while under Rita's spell, referred to Zordon as a green head when he is clearly blue, and this is due in fact to Zordon having originally been planned to have a green head like Zoltar in the unaired pilot. One other thing I'm also going to touch on too is that the dimensional gap where Alpha finds the plant appears to consistently mean The dimensional gap where Alpha finds the plant appears to consist mainly of plastic sheeting on the ground.
You mean trash bags?
Yeah, like, and I'll get to that later, but it looks like a set that was unfinished. As the Rangers pose after Terror Toad is destroyed, Geo-Ranger can be, that's not even an error. That's just old footage. After Alpha teleports out of the command center, a wide angle shows Billy and Kimberly in the cage, and a leg of a person sitting on a ladder is seen in the shot. So Whoops.
Oh, it's okay. There's an episode where you clearly see a child next to the Megazord while it's blasting a monster.
Really?
Yes.
I have not seen that yet.
I think it might be the King Sphinx episode.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, which is like what episode, like, which I think was like a pressing engagement. Mm-hmm. So I think that was the one where you actually saw the kid.
Well, I know that the Japanese footage of that episode, not to sidetrack real fast, but that involved him like tricking kids and like trapping them in trees. So that could have been where that footage came from.
Yeah.
So first and foremost, I did something a little different with this particular episode, taking notes. So I've been watching the episodes while taking notes, pausing and, you know, writing and then going back to the episode, which takes way too much time. So I figured, why not rebel against the system? It works better for me here, man. Also, there's a warning on the Zero Ranger Counterpart episode's wiki page. It says, warning, this episode contains scenes of blood, graphic violence, sexual humor, gun violence, and gambling. Viewer discretion is advised. So you should totally not go and watch this episode of Zero Ranger after listening to this podcast on Shout Factory's website, Pluto TV, or Amazon, or any other on-demand services at all. Don't do that at whatsoever.
Go watch it now after this episode's over.
Smoke.
If anyone didn't catch the smoke reference, go watch Family Guy. It's the episode of where Peter goes to Washington.
Are you smoking yet? okay.
Not now.
So I watched Evil Billy's first scene and my thought was, oh God, this is going to be a long episode. So I will say something cool about this episode is that Babu takes over as the main antagonist for the story. Rita ultimately winds up sending down Teruto to finish the job. And by proxy, the episode shifting focus like this does kind of hurt it a little bit, but given the format of most Super Sentai and Power Ranger episodes, this can be forgiven. I do love the idea of Babu being this kind of sorcerer-like entity that can make up potions of whatnot, though. I think that's a kind of a nice little touch, and we don't get to see enough of that. So this episode begins and ends with volleyball as a sport that the Rangers chose to play that week. I'm pretty certain there was a dartboard in the office that someone would throw a dart at, and whatever it landed on was a sport that the Rangers did that week. Let's see, scuba diving, football, volleyball. Who wants to put shuffleboard and curling up there next?
You do know that in like the 28 years now of Power Rangers, mm-hmm. Guess how many episodes they've done with hockey?
How many?
I don't think they've done any.
Yeah, I admit, I don't know. That's kind of lame.
Like, they've done several with baseball, several with football, several with soccer, several with basketball, several with volleyball. I don't think they've ever done a single episode with hockey.
That's lame.
Yeah. So anyways, continue.
I don't think they've ever done wrestling either. So there's
this. Well, they wouldn't do wrestling because they have all the martial arts.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. So there's this bit where Kim comes up to the playground with drinks and Billy tags out saying, wow, those drinks look delicious. Okay, here's my nitpick on this. One, it's a whisker basket with 5 whiskey glasses inside of it. 2, it's water, Billy. And unless somehow you guys were getting the Croy scent all the way back in time, I don't want to hear anything about water being tasty. Is it refreshing? Yes. Am I a slave to it sometimes? Absolutely. I don't even see any ice in that cup, though, dude. Like, it's summertime in Southern California. You're playing volleyball in the middle of the day, and you don't need, like, a Gatorade or something. You got this tiny little thing of water. That's going to do you. Okay, cool. Whatever. Just an honest, you know, critique of that. Sorry. Anyways, Babu uses Bandora-sama's bike from episode 1 of Zero Ranger to fly overhead and spike their drinks, which turn a fizzy red and then turn back into a clear liquid. Remember, kids, spike volleyballs, not people's drinks. It's bad. Billy and Kim drink it up and their mood sours instantly. Kimberly pulls this off pretty good, but, well, Amy Jo Johnson pulls this off pretty good, but Billy really chews the scenery in this episode. It's like someone told David Yost to be the first thing he thought of when he thinks of being bad. And so now he's saying things like, yeah, man, you're not the baddest dude in school anymore, in such a dumb way. And I both love it and I'm secondhand embarrassed by this at the same time. And at this point in the episode, I do want to mention, and I know we're focused on Power Rangers here, but because of the nature of this episode, I do want to mention the Super Sentai equivalent episode, because This episode, like I said before, is almost a direct translation of Be Careful of Shaved Ice. There's a reason it's called that. The episode starts with Tot-Pat, or Tot-Pato, who is Babu's counterpart, making a poison and getting to the Zeo Rangers in the same fashion via flying bicycle. The Zeo Rangers are playing tennis instead of volleyball, which I guess tennis isn't American or boyish enough, so it got changed to volleyball in Power Rangers? I don't know. But here, May, the Pink Ranger, grabs everyone's shaved ice instead of Kim grabbing everyone melted shaved ice. And instead of the poison turning clear, you can visibly see where the poison lands on the shaved ice, which I guess could be confused for flavoring, but come on, May, you're the one that bought it. You should be able to see that it's been tainted. The effect of the poison in Super Sentai is very immediate, by the way, and violent, compared to the almost flicking of a switch in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. What's cool here is, like, May just does not give one crap at all. She tells Dan not to touch him, grabs a chair, hits him over the head with it, and walks off with the similarly affected, she hits Boy with it, and then walks off with Dan, who's similarly affected, like a boss. And we'll get back into some of the stuff that happens there, because you're not going to believe what they got away with over there, but let's get back to Power Rangers.
Yeah, eventually we'll get the Sentai on this show.
I do need to mention, we're not going to review the episode of Zeo Ranger, but oh my god, it's nuts what happens there. But we do need to talk about this one. So back to Power Rangers. Billy and Kim show up to school the next day looking like they raided a Hot Topic, yet somehow avoided the goth section. Billy and Kim show up to school the next day looking like they raided a Hot Topic, yet avoided the goth section somehow, shake down a nerd for lunch money, and then they go to mess with Bulk and Skull at their lockers. Bulk has one of the grossest lockers ever, by the way, and like he somehow has like liquid in there that's not seeping through the locker slots. Like he's got like popcorn and beans and, you know, like hot links and stuff in there, and I'm like, why?
How do you get all that crap in there?
How did you get in there? Like how? Why? What?
I think this is the part where Ben comes in and goes, that's not how science works.
Well, not so much science, but physics. That's not how physics works. It
physics is a form of science, is it not?
It is.
No, so there you go. This is not how science works on this one. Okay.
So as, let's see here. So Billy and Kim make their way over to Bulk and Skull. Kim aggressively asks Skull out on a date, and Billy stares down Bulk and punks him out. Billy looks all right. He's got like a denim shirt with cutoff sleeves, blue shades, and a bandana. But Kim's over here with a leotard, leather jacket, and teased hair, and man, like, she could have used a pair of, like, Doc Martens, and I wish she had done some punk spikes with her hair or something, maybe a mohawk, you know, like, gotten some Elmer's glue in there and really done some awesome, like, Sid Vicious spikes, but her hair's fine. I guess Bulk and Skull really get intimidated by both of them, and they exit the scene, and then Alpha...
Well, I wouldn't say Skull got intimidated. Because keep in mind, it's like Skull and Kim are now going out on this date. Like, Skull got what he's always wanted.
Yeah, oh. Skull's got like a mile wide smile on his face, and meanwhile, Bulk's just like, let's get out of here.
Yeah, so it's like, I would say it's completely opposite though for Skull compared to Bulk.
Yeah. Let's see here. So at this point in the episode, Alpha transports all five Rangers, sensing something is wrong. And at this point, Terror Toad shows up, Zack, Trini, and Zack head off to fight him, and Zordon begins formulating a way to get Billy and Kim back to normal. Zordon sends Alpha to an alternate dimension to get a singing squash, but not before the viewing globe shows us Zordon in human form thousands of years ago hunting for the same fruit, or the root, sorry. They do use footage of Barza here to depict a younger Zordon, which I think is really cool, and I wish they, again, had done more of that, because I feel like that could have worked, maybe. Alpha winds up in a soundstage with, like I said, plastic on the floor, and either Joe Pesci is about to get whacked in Goodfellas, or someone ran out of time and didn't put any footage on the ground, which I'm just saying, this just seems like something that somebody got fired for on set, is all. You know, it's like, you had X amount of time to get this set done, you didn't. We're going to have to film it anyways because we're on a tight schedule, but pack your bag, you're out of here. You know, that's just, I don't know. That's the first thing I thought of when I saw that. So Alpha gets the singing squash, and if the singing squash reminds you of anything, it's because it's based on a mandrake root. This thing is even called a Mandragora in Super Sentai. Both Mei and Dan and Kim and Billy recover by drinking the juice of this thing, show up, beat the monster, and the episode ends with another volleyball game. Now, if that thing looks familiar to you as well, but you've never seen this episode, thank Harry Potter for that, because it's the same kind of mandrake root that, you know, they had to wear earplugs for in I think that was Chamber of Secrets. I can't remember.
I don't know. I'm not a Harry Potter fan.
I don't know. I just know that that was.
I have never read the books. I haven't watched the movies. I've never been into Harry Potter. It's fair. Not my thing.
That's fair. I'm just saying. If it looked familiar, that's why. Just because of Harry Potter. This wound up kind of being
a. Or because you watched Power Rangers as a kid and then again as adult.
That's fair too. So this episode kind of wound up being a Pink Ranger episode near the end, and Kim's the one that winds up getting the killing shot on Terror Toad. There's no Megazord fight in this episode, which kind of sucks. And I will say Kim winning the fight is awesome, and I loved the footage and everything, and just how she, you know, just pulled back and just let loose an arrow, and again, it kind of weaved and just got him. But I do highly recommend watching the Zero Ranger episode of this if you get a chance, and it's you can watch it on Shout Factory for free, because Mei winds up doing some really awesome Hunger Games stuff in order to trick, well, his name is Dora Bagarner. I don't know how to pronounce that. It's Bagaranan, I think.
I don't know. I don't have it in front of me.
It's the Terror Toad. She kills the Terror Toad, but like not before she sets up like all these like pressure triggers and stuff. And like, it's really cool. By the way, going back to Zero Ranger, there's a Yakuza scene. Dan threatens someone with a katana, and I think Mei and Dan actually kill some drug dealers and steal their money and cocaine in that. Like, they literally have, like, an Uzi and stuff, or, like a Tommy gun, and, like let loose on these, like, gangsters. And I'm like, what? Like, what? Like, okay, like, Billy and Kim have a bad attitude, but, like, yo, like, the Japanese ones, like, they straight up murdered somebody. Like, And everything's fine at the end of the episode, but like, I think y'all have a kill list now. Wow. So.
Whoops! I didn't mean to do that.
So, whoopsie. All right. So that's my notes for Power Ranger Punks.
All right. So Power Ranger Punks comes in at 7.5 out of 10 on the IMDb score. Which now brings us to Peace, Love, and Woe, and our final time doing everyone's favorite segment, In My Mind, the quick run-through of Peace, Love, and Woe. And we begin at the youth center. They're getting ready for the dance, and poor Bulk can't get a lady. Rita wants Madam Woe. Billy is unsure about going to the dance. He wants to work on his project. And then, bam, walks right into the girl of his dreams. The others want him to ask her to the dance, but she asked him. But they make plans to meet first. Rita calls Madam Woe, and she just submits to Rita because sure, why not? And Madam Woe gets the wrong person because whoopsies, why not? And even Rita is like, "What are you doing? Like, I told you to go after Billy, not the girl." Billy arrives to find Marge's necklace. So she does have a name. It's good to know that. Oh, but by the way, Putty's attacked at the same time. Billy pages the others for help. And then Zordon briefs the Rangers on Madam Woe. He tells them they can combine their powers to defeat her, which Billy volunteers to be the one. They morph into action and to the dimension you go. They find Marge, but the battle is not going well. They combine their power coins with Billy. He gets out and is able to destroy her crystal after taking a beating, of course. The others return from the dimension. Marge runs for cover, power blaster for the victory. And at the dance, Zack is showing off his dance skills in Bulk and Skull in disguise, and Ernie catches them. Billy and Marge talking. Zack is jealous. And then so now we see Bulk. He gets money from the bank. Skull is horrified, and down goes Ernie. He's dead. Somebody notify the family, because Bulk has just straight up murdered Ernie with his sock money. Like Ernie is, like, let me put it in perspective like this. Ernie is so dead that Jim Ross is calling this match right now. Going, think about that man's family. That man's been broken in half.
My God. My God.
Bulk took the money out from the stock. My God. He just killed Ernie. My God.
Someone stop the dang match.
So with that, that was Peace, Love, and Woe, which clocked in at 20 minutes and 6 seconds.
Sorry. I had to. I had to.
I know. No. I set it up that way. So, like, yeah.
That's a human being in there. all right. So, MMPR Season 1, Episode 13, Peace, Love, and Woe, originally aired September 21st, 1993. The Super Sentai episode counterpart was, again, Kyoto Sentai Zeranger, Episode 33, Teach Me the Jewel of Bravery. First, we'll do some trivia, then we'll do some errors, and then we'll get on to my notes. So, Billy meets Marge, boy and girl fall in love, and then Marge is never heard from again after this episode. So, okay. Alpha appears in this episode, but has only one line, that being, Billy, you shouldn't blame yourself, when Billy blamed himself for Marge's kidnapping. Madam Woe is the first monster we get an abrupt introduction to, where we get no proper introduction, and the episode just randomly cuts to her sprouting her first words by the sea. Madam Woe is in the Sega Genesis game as a playable character and as a boss. She's also the first female monster to be featured on the show. She's also the first monster to have unclear origins that we don't know what created her, since we first see her performing some ritual. Even the Nasty Knight was said to have been a creation of Finster's that was hidden in a tree for a few thousand years, but she has nothing. This episode marks the first use of the term power coins. And this episode is another favorite of David Yost's, who plays Billy in the same show. Some errors. Rita tells Finster get her Madam Woe, yet we would later see that she was her own independent entity and not a clay model. The way the Billy fight was paced made it look like the Rangers went from the youth center to the park in 20 seconds, which I thought was kind of odd. I feel like they should have, like, made him, like, struggle a little more than that. The scene where the
Blue Ranger... It's almost as if, like, they used their communicators to actually teleport.
I mean, if they did, we didn't see, like, the effect on it or anything, so maybe they just forgot that in post. The scene where the Blue Ranger removes Woe's head jewel and crushes it is original footage, actually. That's American footage. Also, Woe's headdress is missing during the jewel removal, but is back on her head in the next scene. The jewel is missing in the following scene, but there's damage to the forehead, and Billy did nothing to cause that damage. Let's see here. Oh yeah, this was kind of weird. Zordon confirmed that Jason was right about Rita's part in Marge's disappearance, but Jason never said anything about Rita. Let's see here. And then...
And who knows? Maybe Zordon's telepathic. Like, he knew what Jason was thinking.
Yeah. All right, so getting into my main notes here. So, my initial thought was, this is a hard one to sit through. As much as I love Billy, and as much as I love David Yost as a person, this episode is rife with quote-unquote nerdy flirting and techno-babblish lingo. And Marge at one point says a capital idea in reference to going out to the park with Billy in the most unironic yet ironic way possible. It was said in such a way that I thought there was like, I don't know, I felt like Charlie was setting up a scheme and It's Always Sunny from Philadelphia. That's how she said it. It's like a capital idea, my friend. You know, let's go to get drunk at the Phillies park or something. I don't know.
That's a capital idea, good sir.
Capital idea, chum vomit. which is a Patton Oswalt reference, if you don't know that. So this episode begins with Bulk skateboarding through the very busy juice bar where Ernie is getting ready to have a party. Ernie already has the cake out and Bulk crashes into it, which I have a question. Why didn't Ernie just leave it in the fridge until it was party time? I mean, Ernie actually, you know, you never take the cake out until it's time to light it up. That's all I'm saying. Ernie actually does something, Mike, that I didn't think he actually would ever do. He kicks out Balkan's skull. He tells him not to come back until they pay for the cost of the cake that was damaged, or just stay out. And I'm like, dude, good on you. Way to put your foot down. Like, that's – I never thought that somebody would actually step up to them like that. Like, I know Principal Kaplan does typically and, like, you know, but, like, somebody who actually runs an establishment saying you're banned, I was like, wow, that's – you guys messed up. The main story of this episode follows Billy, who doesn't want to come to the dance despite being encouraged by the rest of the team. I call that peer pressure. Peer pressure. Peer pressure.
One of us. One of us.
Billy really doesn't want to do this until he literally bumps into Marge, who shares his predilection for being socially awkward and using technobabble in casual conversation. They strike up a conversation, find out both of them graduated from the same baby genius kindergarten program. Look, I don't know, whatever. And continue on until the team calls Billy over to the counter. They've been playfully spying on Billy, and I can just hear Kim saying something like, ooh, someone's got a girlfriend, you know, something like that.
Like, that's teasing sass, him. That's sass.
That's sass.
That's sass.
My God, that's sass. and encourage him.
Shit, Jim Ross going in. My God, that sass. She just sass. She just sassed him to death.
So they encourage him to ask her out to the dance, and Billy is so shy, and he's like, I can't. But then Marge makes the first move, and I they didn't say it, but I could literally hear all the other Rangers going, ooh, Billy's got a girlfriend. So Billy agrees, but they also want to get to know each other first. So they agree to meet at the park around 4 p.m. so that they can later go dancing at 7 p.m. Okay. I guess it makes sense. They're in high school, right? Also, earlier on, Marge dropped her necklace and Billy gave it back to her. The necklace in this episode isn't so much a MacGuffin or a red herring or Chekhov's gun, but it does allow Billy to later know that something happened to her at the park and that she didn't stand him up. So, you know, it is kind of like, it's a plot device. It's just not anything like setting up any kind of like plot twist or whatever.
She's really Madam Woe.
Honestly, that would be awesome.
That would be the most ironic plot twist.
Actually, you know what? No, because I feel like that's something that's already been done in Power Rangers before. It's like, hey, let's flirt with one of the Rangers and then like trick them. So
no, that doesn't happen until season two. It doesn't happen until after Adam, Aisha, and Rocky take over for Jason, Trini, and Zach, because there's the episode where Scorpina goes undercover and she's like flirting with Adam.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, so that actually doesn't happen until season two when we finally get something like that. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that episode, but yeah, I do remember that happening. My bad. Yeah. So, Madam Woe. She's pretty awesome. She can, like, control the weather and do all kinds of cool attacks with her hair and stuff. The fight scenes in this particular episode are really awesome, and they did a really good job of matching the American Ranger suit footage line up with the Japanese footage here. They use the same kind of lighting and effects, and they did all kinds of really cool little tricks to make it, like, I thought it was pretty seamless. My problem, and I've never mentioned this before, I just wish that they hadn't used those lumpy turtlenecks with the American shot suits. Because I know that that's supposed to be, like, the head condom that like, you put on before you put on the helmet. But, like, they have these turtlenecks, and that has always bugged the crap out of me, that they have these, like, really lumpy necks. You know,
hey man, you gotta have that neck brace, man. You gotta protect your neck from the whiplash.
That is
I'm just telling you, you gotta protect yourself from whiplash.
That is fair. Especially in this episode, because like Madam Woe just like straight up like throws a ranger.
Like, what's this? Get out of here.
Yeah. So as cool as Madam Woe is, again, it's a bummer that we don't get a Zord fight again. Like, we've had like two episodes now where there's no Zord fight.
It's literally three episodes in a row.
It's ridiculous.
Because in the last episode, Power Ranger Punks, you have Kim win it with the bow. this one's the Power Blaster, and then the next episode, Foul Play in the Sky, which I'm doing with Ben, that is actually also with Kim's bow.
Which is it's fine, but you know, it's like, man, it's a long stretch for them not to have a Zord fight.
Yep.
So she's honestly like, Madame Woe is one of the cooler looking villains, and she isn't even one of Finch's creations, so it's equally disappointing that she gets beat only to not grow. But then it's also, I don't know, it's not Rita's monster, so she couldn't make her monster grow because it wasn't her monster in the first place. And at that point, I just kind of became cross-eyed. And I was like, let's just get the notes done. So it does kind of suck that Billy manages to somehow get himself a girlfriend. Like, we get into the, you know, dance scene here, and they seem to really be hitting it off. She doesn't show up again on the show. A lot of girlfriend characters just tend not to show up.
A lot of these characters just never show up again. We haven't seen Sylvia ever again. We never saw Willie ever again. We never saw Maria ever again.
Yeah.
We don't see Marge ever again. We don't see the deaf girl, whatever the heck her name was, because they only said it once at the very end of the freaking episode. You know, we never saw her again. You know, like, they all disappear.
It's like Zach gets a girlfriend, she disappears. Billy gets a girlfriend.
No. Angela was around decently enough throughout the entire first season.
Yes,
post season one, yes, I agree. Yeah, I agree with that.
So maybe they broke up. I don't know. The real world Power Rangers, the real world Angel Grove. That'd be a fun thing. Does anybody even know what the real world is anymore? If I mention that, like, would they know what the real world is or rules?
No, probably not, because nobody watches MTV anymore.
I don't even think they do that on MTV anymore. It's been like at least 15 years. Anyway,
they don't even do music anymore. Come on now. Let's be honest here.
Yeah.
Happy birthday. We're only celebrating like 14 years of actual music on your station.
So the party's in full swing. Bulk and Skull come to the party in disguise, despite being told otherwise, and are discovered by Ernie, which you mentioned earlier. He demands that either they leave or they pay for the cake, and then Bulk goes to the bank, like you mentioned. Okay. He pulls off his boot, then his sock, and his feet are just, his foot is so gross. By the way, it's like they're covered in dried mud, or he just hasn't washed his feet in a week or something. I don't know, but like, he has all this like gunk on his foot with a sock over top of that. And I'm like, ew, that is gross. And then, so he finally, you know, grabs a dollar bill. He grabs a couple of dollar bills, and he's got like $3 in the sock, which isn't even folded up nice or anything. He's got them like crumpled up and shoved in between his index and pinky toe. And then the smell, which understandably, like, I can't smell through the screen, but it's got to be that bad because Ernie reels back and takes a face bump in the new cake that was bought, which I'm surprised he didn't have to pay for that one either. Despite all of this, Ernie comes to, goes out on the dance floor, dancing with cake on his face like a freaking champion. And honestly, my new spirit animal is Cake Face Ernie. Cake Face Ernie is my spirit animal. He's just like, you know what? It's whatever. It's a party. Cool.
You know what? No, my spirit animal is fallen into the cake dead Ernie. like, where was the police when Bulk murdered that poor man into the cake?
My God, he killed him. So the story for this episode, it doesn't do a whole lot for me. I mean, it's fine. You know, I love seeing Billy happy, but in this episode with how he rejects the idea of pursuing the ladies and knowing about David Yost in real life and all that, it just, you know, you watch this and you can't help but just think, oh yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Well, the thing is, though, is that David has openly come out and says that the character of Billy is in it for the ladies.
Yeah, Billy's straight.
And David has openly said that.
Billy's straight.
So to take that analogy and be like, oh, well, knowing what we know about David now, it's kind of out the window in a way because of the fact that David himself has says, no, Billy
is always into the ladies.
And that's fair. All I'm saying is you watch this episode if you know about, you know, that, and you're just like, maybe, I don't know, like, it because he's so nervous, and it could be chalked up to him just being nervous to talk to a pretty lady. That's absolutely fine, but, like, you know, I could absolutely kind of relate to that when I was growing up as well, where I was just, like, nervous as hell and didn't want to, you know, I didn't know what to do or what to say. So maybe I was reading into, but it can be misconstrued, possibly, is all I'm saying. But, you know, obviously Billy, of course, is straight, but it can come off as that, maybe. I don't know. So in my opinion, for this episode, this was a classic example of suffering through the story to get to the good part kind of episode. Like, I know I tend to like Super Sentai more and more nowadays, and I don't hate Power Rangers. You know what I mean? I don't. It's just that...
You monster.
We haven't gotten to any of the major suck-you-in Power Rangers stories just yet, I feel, like the major ones. But I feel like that's about to change, Mike, because when Yellow and Blue team up, you get a certain color. Color me green with envy, by the way, on that. Because I think next time that we talk about a Power Rangers episode, you know.
You're bringing in Ben's favorite character.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, he loves Tommy so much.
Yes. Yes, he does. So with that, Peace, Love, and Woe got a score of a 7.6 out of 10. So with that... has been No Clowning Around, Power Ranger Punks, and Peace, Love, and Woe. Yes, that same woe that my dating life feels. So with that, Brian, where can the people find you on the social medias?
You can find me on Twitter at OneDrunkGeek. You can also find me on CastWaveStudios.com, where I host One Drunk Geek, which is an actual show. We talk about craft beer. I also host... Boldly Going Nowhere, which is a show that's been running for about almost 10 years, actually, now that I think about it. We kind of talk about this, that, the other. If anything really drops major in, like, you know, the geek and nerd news world, we typically pick up on that as fast as possible. You can also find me on Instagram at Draken22. I take a lot of, you know, convention photos and just random photos there, what have you. So you can find me on all those platforms. Mike, where can we find you on the Worldwide Wonder Whoops?
You can find me on the Twitters at TheLindenBaum75, Facebook at Facebook.com/X75Productions. And of course, everything is also on the website at TXHTHockey.com. And for the show specifically, /VFTG, which is the call letters of Voices from the Grid. So with that, Brian, take us out.
All right. So I'm Brian, the Sentai Did It Better Massey. Be sure to grab your morphers.
And until next time, may the power protect you.